Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Welcome to Four Down Territory. As Stink and Mike take a look at the four biggest stories in Denver sports. Here's Schlereth and Evans kicking it off with First Down.
Here we go. A couple of NFL network guys, Tom Pelissero and Mike Garofalo, created quite a storm yesterday, firestorm, with the idea that Russell Wilson is losing guys in that locker room. Well, Russell responded to that charge yesterday.
Everybody wants to win. We all want to win. You know, and nobody wants to win, you know, more than me and this team and what we want to be able to do. I think also as well, man, I got great relationships in the locker room. So whoever's trying to tear it down, you can't. There's always noise, especially when things aren't going the way you want it to all the time. And so the thing is that you don't bat an eye. You know that, you know, my biggest goal every day is to continue to try to lead at the highest level.
He also said, look, you got to win. And isn't it as simple as this? Tell me, well, you haven't been in many losing locker rooms because all you do is win. But I can't imagine that there are NFL locker rooms with losing teams in which everybody in that room has their quarterbacks back. If you're a 3-8, 3-9 football team, of course you're going to lose some people. Of course you're going to have people who are wondering if you're the guy to get it done.
Especially when you're the guy that got all that money and you're the guy that's got all the accolades and the office and the, you know, and the free reign of the facility and the, and you've got all your people there. Hey, I get it. When you're winning, that's great. These are the things that, you know, that the people in Seattle complain about. When you're winning, you can put up with it, even though it still bothers some people. But when you're losing, man, it's you know, it's exponentially more in your face. I think that's the majority of guys will, yes, you know, hey, man, we're a team, we're this, we're that. I get it. But are there going to be some guys that look a little side-eyed at you? Yeah, absolutely.
Second down.
Nathaniel Hackett responding to the same idea. Russ losing guys in the room.
To me, it's all gossip. I mean, I know how this locker room, we have a fantastic locker room. When you look at a guy like Russ, I mean, he's unbelievable. I mean, he works. I mean, I've never seen somebody work that hard. I've never seen somebody try to embrace a team like he has while he's here. I mean, just from everything that he does, from walkthroughs to helping. I mean, how he is in the community. I mean, Russ is awesome, and we just need to do better as a team. It's that simple.
While I love Nathaniel Hackett defending Russ, I continue to hear that every week from Hackett. There is a reluctance from him to be at all publicly critical of Russ. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying you have to, you know, go full Brian Shaw and just rip players by name and things like that. I get it, but do you hear the same thing? They're just he will not go there.
It's all about Russ.
He will not say, hey, look, I love Russ. He works hard. Nobody works harder, but, you know, he's like every one of us. He's got to be better. He's got to play better. But he doesn't really want to go there.
Yeah.
It's all about, I got to do more for Russ. I got to do this for Russ. I got to make Russ more comfortable. I got to come up with better plays. We got to come up with better schemes. We got to block better. I don't hear, but at the end of the day, Russ has got to pick up his game too.
Right. Do you hear Russ? Do you hear Russ saying that he's got to play better? You know, when I asked him specifically in our production meeting, said, obviously it's not going well, right? What do you have to do? You said you had to play better. Remember a couple weeks ago you said you had to play better?
Yep.
I said, you said you have to play better. Give me specifics. What is it that you have to do better? Well, we have to score more touchdowns was his answer to me. No, I don't. I get that. You got to score more touchdowns, right? What do you have to do? Well, we, you know, we, like, there was never I. There was no answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's, to me, those are things that I want to know what you, and eventually we got to things that, you know, but it takes time. I always say this, especially the quarterback position, man, you cannot be a French waiter. It can't be wee. It's got to be you. And you have to be able to accept 100% of the issues when they come to your football team. And I need more of that from him.
Third down.
So the Nuggets, for the second time in 3 days, beat up on the hapless Houston Rockets. And Jamal Murray working his way back into that really unique chemistry that he and Nikola Jokic share.
I think it's just me just getting back to form. I think that's it. He's been waiting on me to you know, back cut or screen for him, just stuff like that. I think, like I said, just reps, just doing it more often. Like I said, from the first game to now, you guys see the improvement. So we're all just going to keep improving.
Yeah, that's something that's going to be fun to watch, because those two, that's the word, chemistry. They really know how to play off of each other, pick and roll, and they just have this unspoken language that connects the two of them. And boy, I'm already excited by the initial results. I can't wait to see what this thing looks like in the second half, and certainly as we get closer to the playoffs. By the way, I am still, I know it's early and things could change, I'm still kind of getting used to the new look Western Conference of the NBA. Because you look at the top half, it's Phoenix, Denver,
right,
New Orleans, Memphis. No Lakers.
Right.
No San Antonio.
No Clippers.
No Clippers. No Golden State.
Where's Golden State at?
They're eighth at 11-11. 2-10 on the road. I figure they'll figure it out, but yeah. Not your daddy's Western Conference right now.
No, for sure it's not.
And by the way, the Nuggets continue to only be one game behind Phoenix for the top spot in the Western Conference. Nuggets 14-7. They've won four in a row. One more.
The gang is here.
No. All right, I'll just mention it real quick. Great news for the Avalanche. Off last night, Gabe Landeskog back on the ice. He's coming back from knee surgery. They've been talking about a New Year's return. The fact that he's on the ice December 1st. Hey, maybe by Christmas we could see the captain back. Great news.
You know what we need? What sound we need for that? Just some ice skates. Whack, 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 whack. You know when he's skating down the ice?
Yeah. Blades.
There's something about blades on ice.
Yes.
Just sound.
Yeah, it's glorious.
It does sound
Blades
glorious.
Of glory.
It is Blades of glory. Yeah. Chaz Michael Michaels.
Now do it for Four Down Territory. Speaking of those Nuggets, Matt Moore, our Nuggets insider, joins us next.
Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Our Nuggets insider, Matt Moore, joins us courtesy of Michelob Ultra, an official beer sponsor of the Denver Nuggets. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, how are y'all?
We're doing great. Hey, they get a big win last night, a blowout win last night, but Michael Malone basically criticizes his team for only playing half of basketball. Yeah, how do you respond to that, and what's the end goal for Michael Malone and this Nuggets team?
I mean, I think, you know, he's satisfied with the win, but yeah, for him, the process hasn't been good enough, and it makes sense. Like, their goal coming into the season was, they talked about being a top five defense, and they are, you know, light years away from that. They're just nowhere near it. And so, I don't know, Malone has a habit of when everything feels comfortable and good, that's when he tends to really bear down and tighten up. And then when things are really kind of tough and adversity hits, that's when he backs off a little bit. So I'm not necessarily surprised to see it. The Nuggets knew from game one on Monday versus the same Rockets team that they could handle this, that this team wasn't in the same class. But if they're going to be a championship-level team, they want to build those habits. And I think that's why Malone was critical last night.
Do you think they're close to adopting those habits, learning those habits?
No, no, I don't. You know, I think it's interesting just because I think that there are some there are sequences where they're really good defensively. And Malone mentioned this. I asked him about the defense on Monday, and he mentioned that in their wins, they're actually really good defensively. But in their losses, they're absolutely terrible defensively. And so that kind of shows you the difference in it. And this has kind of been the thing, is when they control the things that they can control, when they do commit to defense and they don't turn the ball over, they win about 90% of the time. But they just simply don't always commit to those types of things. I think that there's a possibility for them to get there by the end of the season. I think they have the personnel. When I watch them, I see a lot of veterans, Aaron Gordon, KCP, Bruce Brown, Jeff Green, those type of guys that are definitely in the early parts of the season. And they know, look, we got 5 more months to go. So I'm not putting the Jets on right now versus the Rockets. And so we'll see, you know, come January, if they can show that they have that gear. The question is, can you just turn a defensive switch on? Everything else with this team is great.
Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, when you play against the Rockets, that's one thing. When you play against some of the elite teams in the NBA, do you have the skill set from a defensive perspective with a Joker and with the MPJ and some of the guys? Do you have enough guys that can actually really bear down and play defense? Or do they get exposed against, you know, better players and better teams?
Yeah, so I think the thing with them, and this has been evident since their first playoff run, is that I don't think that this team can be a great defensive team night in, night out. I think they can find the solutions to win playoff series. Like, that to me is what they can do. They can play good enough defense to get through. And that's going to be the question. I don't think this is going to be a top five unit on both ends of the ball, because in part, you know, they've changed a lot of their scheme over the last couple of years with how they defend with Nikola Jokic. And it honestly, it puts him at a disadvantage. It makes things a lot tougher for him, and it makes things easier for the opponent to attack him. And some of that's to conserve his energy. If you play more aggressive, which he's more comfortable with and he's better at, it exhausts him. And because he's taken on such a huge role on the team, obviously, they've kind of limited that. I don't know if they're able to play different schemes to be able to turn that on if you don't practice those types of things. There's a lot of signs that the team is better defensively than the numbers kind of indicate. The question is just going to be, you know, when they face, the next time they face Boston in January, that to me is like the one I'm going to circle to say, okay, that you got absolutely destroyed by that team first time out. Can you at home figure out how to slow that kind of an offense down in a revenge spot, or do you just get waxed again?
Visit with Matt Moore, our Nuggets insider. In fairness to the Nuggets, right now the NBA is on steroids right now when it comes to scoring. It wasn't that long ago that you only found 6-7 teams in the entire league averaging over 100 points. Everybody's well over 100 points. In fact, the Cleveland Cavaliers are the number one defensive team in the NBA, and they're giving up 106 points per game. The Nuggets are at 113. So is it really that big a deal, especially in the context of what's going on around the entire league?
You know, I asked Malone about, like, why is scoring basically so crazy now? Like, what's different about the NBA now? And he was talking about how it's basically officiated to where all of the rules are against the defense, all of them. The offense has the advantage in every single capacity. And he talked about, you know, the efficiency that teams play now with shooting so many threes and spacing the floor causes a lot of problems as well. You know, the question of, okay, well, nobody can defend, but if you look, you know, a lot of the best defensive teams, not Boston, surprisingly. Boston's terrible defensively so far, which is weird. But Milwaukee, Miami's in that conversation, Cleveland, these are top five defenses. And I think there is a feeling that while everybody's really, you know, scorching hot to start the season, as things settle down, the thing you can count on is your defense. That's what you can count on night in, night out. You don't know if the shots are going to fall or not. It provides a way for you to win games when your offense is not clicking and rolling. And that's the question is. And again, the Nuggets, I don't think, have to be elite. They just got to be better than what they've been.
Okay, good enough. Matt, really appreciate it. Good conversation. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Matt Moore, our Nuggets insider, presented by Michelob Ultra, an official beer sponsor of the Denver Nuggets. Up next, what's trending? Is Birthdaygate a big deal? We'll tell you whether it is or not. And could the GOAT be going back home to where it all began? That's next.
Here's Schlereth and Evans with what's trending right now.
Birthday gate. So maybe half of the team showed up, or some would say less than half
yes.
showed up.
Yeah.
Yeah. DJ Jones fired back on Twitter saying you're all reaching on this type of thing. It's no big deal. I heard Derek Wolfe on the drive yesterday say, hey, half the team showing up on their day off. That's great, actually. That's a good turnout. Is this a thing, or is this being like a lot of things? And Russ puts himself out there in a way to attract these kind of, air quote, controversies.
Right.
But is there anything to this?
No. And I'm with Derek Wolfe. Half the guys showing up, that's big. I mean, that's a lot of dudes showing up. Now, why are you showing up? Are you showing up to be seen? Showing up because you're really celebrating? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I do know, though, getting half your team to show up to anything during a day off, especially when you want to pack yourself in ice and just lay on your own couch, That's significant. That's a lot of guys showing up. I would venture to guess there are very few guys in the NFL that would get half their, if they have a birthday party, you're going to get half the guys to show up to it.
I can't imagine you ever went out on your day off.
Not if I could help it,
right?
Not if I could help it. If it's something I had to do, yeah, but for the most part.
But if somebody was holding a birthday party, you'd wait till the next day and say, hey, happy birthday. Here's a little token of my appreciation.
Yeah, there's no...
You wouldn't be going out to the birthday party.
There's very few times you'll ever see me out and about. Or a boot. If I was playing for the ass.
I'm in my tub of ice right now. I can't move. Kyler Murray and Patrick Peterson have themselves a little feud going.
I saw that.
So Patrick Peterson, former Kyler Murray teammate in Arizona, now with the Vikings... had this to say about what's going on in Arizona, his old team. Quote, Kyler Murray don't care about nobody but Kyler Murray. That's just a matter of fact. And Kyler Murray responded by saying, quote, this isn't true. You on some weird bleep. He tweeted at Patrick Peterson, you got my number. If you felt like this as a big bro or mentor, you're supposed to call and tell me, not drag me, so your podcast can grow. You want to talk about the idea of a quarterback losing guys in his room? I could see that being the case with Kyler Murray, not only because the record is what the record is, and again, it comes back to wins, but also the whole idea, how committed is this guy really to his job and to his team?
It's a great question, Mike. It's a great question. And, you know, the funny thing is you're complaining about him talking about you on your podcast, and you say you're supposed to call me. Well, you got his number, too. You can call Patrick Peterson instead of, you know, going right back on social media. But I get it. I mean, yeah, I think there's a lot of people out there, or there are a lot of athletes that use social media as a passive-aggressive way to, you know, to get your word out. And if somebody's besmirching your name publicly like that, you want to go back at them publicly. I don't know if that's necessarily the right way to do things, but anyhow, interesting though. I mean, the fact that it's out there, the fact that a guy like Patrick Peterson, who is a pro's pro, by the way, and has always been huge in the mentoring aspect of players, and you can talk to a ton of players that have played with Patrick. They'll tell you that. That's a pretty, you know, pretty large scarlet letter he's painted on Kyler Murray's chest.
Could Tom Brady be going back to the Patriots? It was floated by The Athletic's Jeff Howe, who covered the team from 2009 to 2021. Said, quote, don't ever write off the Patriots, and that the duo still have an abundance of respect for one another. And Matt Light, a former Brady teammate, offensive lineman.
Sure.
He also said he could see the possibility of Tom Brady coming back to New England.
Kind of a swan song.
A lot of different storylines to this one. First of all, could you see that happening? If Tom decides he wants to play another year. The whole Tampa experience, been there, done that. Go back to where it all began. Go back to Papa Bear.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he realizes that, hey, maybe Bill was good for me, better for me than I thought at the end. The other question is, what does this mean for Squishy Mac?
Think Squishy Mac would protest, stomp his feet?
I don't think he'd really have any choice, would he?
No, he's got to play backup now.
So let's see. Would that be... See, that would... If the Patriots ever entertain that... I don't think this is going to happen, by the way. But if they ever did entertain that idea, wouldn't they be telling you that we've already made up our mind that Mac Jones ain't going to be the guy long-term? Or are they just saying, hey, we think he could be, but this would be year three for him. Draft him in the first round. In theory, we'd have control of him for 5 years.
Right.
And this would be a chance for him to take 1 year to learn at the knee of the master.
Probably a good thing for him. You know, it is interesting, like, to see how that would play out, Mike, is really interesting. Do you think Brady's going to retire after this year? He's got the Fox deal.
I think he's going to retire.
I do, too.
He doesn't look happy. He doesn't look like he's having fun. He's had all the stuff going on in his personal life. He just looks miserable. But could a return to New England re-energize him?
Absolutely.
He wouldn't have Josh.
He would not have Josh.
He'd have the dynamic duo of Joe Judge and Matt Patricia.
Huge. Well, he knows them both.
Yeah.
Really well.
Sure.
So Charles Barkley talking at length recently about how he's bummed out that he and Michael Jordan, who used to be best buddies, have had a falling out and have not talked to each other in about 10 years.
Wow.
He said that he and Jordan have crossed paths about 5 times in that span, and they've always just walked right past each other without saying a word. Barkley said it all began when he was critical of Jordan about whether or not he could be successful as an executive with the Charlotte Hornets.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find you had that problem once you became a commentator? That you had to tell the truth, you had to share your opinion, and did it cause some fractures of relationships?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It did with a few people. So, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I go by the theory, and I heard this a long time ago, and I've always believed in this. You know, I mean, you got to tell the truth. On this radio, like, you know, I like Hackett a lot as a guy, but you got to say that they're just not operating very well. You know, same thing with Russ. You got to tell the truth about it. But the old saying is, if you're mad at me for telling you the truth, then I'm a better friend to you than you are to me. So, like, if you're angry at me for spewing the truth, then that's a you problem, not a me problem. Now, if I'm lying about you, that's a different story.
That is what's trending. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we'll have the Denver Fan front page for you, immediately followed by Adam Schefter will be joining us. But up next, what does the film say? And why won't Nathaniel Hackett say more of this when it comes to Russell Wilson? That's next.
Loosen up those joints and muscles. It's time for your 7:45 stretch. Here's Schlereth and Evans with the biggest story in Denver sports.
We'll get to what does the film say here in just a few. But listening to Nathaniel Hackett yesterday, and let me preface this by saying, I want Nathaniel Hackett to succeed. I think anybody would want somebody who has this kind of an outlook on life to succeed. But in his attempt to be so relentlessly positive, I just think he continues to present himself in a way that he's not doing himself any favors. And
sure.
Let me share some examples with you.
we've been talking all season long about accountability. Like, too much stuff has been allowed to happen. They're the most penalized team in the NFL. Mistakes continue to be made, and yet, or poor play continues to be, I guess, justified and okayed, right? No real sense of consequence. Well, this was him yesterday talking about accountability.
Again, you know, I'm going to be me, and I'm kind of a positive person most of the time. But I think it's about holding people accountable and speaking truth. I think truth is so important, is that when things are not going well, you have to point those things out. You can't be afraid to be able to point those things out. And as long as you continually do that, both myself, looking at myself first, and being able to point those things out so I can grow from those different things, and then the people can now watch and see, hey, if he can do it, then we can do it, and that's how we grow and get better.
Sounds great. I can't imagine it's being preached, but is it being practiced?
Yeah, that I can't tell. I mean, pointing things, I'm sure they are pointing things out that are incorrect. They are pointing things out that need to improve. All those things I'm sure are 100% true. But where's the accountability? Like, there's a difference between pointing something out that needs to be rectified and then actually holding people accountable. So that if it's not rectified, then there are consequences to the lack of rectification. Is that?
Sure. Go with it.
Yeah. Rectifiedness.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Now you're losing me.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
At some point you've got
You had me at rectification.
Yeah, rectification. At some point you got to be able... Right, damn near killed him. So at some point, you've got to be able to say, dude, listen, man, I'm not going to let you play. Or if you don't do it the way I want it done, then guess what? You're not going to get to do it anymore. And like those things, like I'll go back to Shannon Sharp. Shannon Sharp, before I got here in 1995, Shannon Sharp was notorious for not practicing. To the point where, notorious might be a little strong, but, you know, he had ankle issues, he had this, that, and the other, and, you know, and to the point where, even when I got here, there was some animosity towards that. Like, everybody else has to practice, but you don't have to practice. Like, that's part of it. And Shannon, believe me, Shannon was a great teammate. But I think Shannon became a great teammate over the course of his later career because Mike Shanahan held his feet to the fire. Basically said, hey, listen, if you don't do the things that are required, if you don't practice, I'm not going to let you play. We need you. We need you to block. We need you to do these things. You're going to get fed. You're going to get plenty of opportunity. But there was an accountability factor under Mike Shanahan that he hadn't had under, I think, Dan Reeves and Wade Phillips. And so he did. He practiced every day. He actually became a good blocker. He actually did his due diligence in that regard. Like, there was... And he knew that this, I'm not messing around. I won't play you.
And I guess what I don't understand is that here's a guy who is under fire. He's beleaguered. Everybody seems to believe he's going to be fired by the end of the season or at the end of the season. And yet I don't get the sense that he's going down swinging.
Right.
And so, like, he was asked yesterday about the idea of, is there any scenario you could see where Russell Wilson wouldn't play? Based on giving your team a better chance to win. He said, no, flat out no.
Right.
And we're all like, what? I find that skull imploding. Like, really? There's no scenario when you look at an offense that's scoring 14 points per game. And when he talks about Russ, and I'm not looking to just pile on Russ, but it's more from the standpoint of Hackett, like, why do you you have no problem calling yourself out? You have no problem talking about all the other parts of the football team that need to be better. But I want you to listen to him talk about Russ and the lengths that he goes to defend Russ.
To me, it's all gossip. I mean, I know how this locker room, we have a fantastic locker room. When you look at a guy like Russ, I mean, he's unbelievable. I mean, he works. I mean, I've never seen somebody work that hard. I've never seen somebody try to embrace a team like he has while he's here. I mean, just from everything that he does, from walkthroughs to helping. I mean, how he is in the community. I mean, Russ is awesome, and we just need to do better as a team. It's that simple.
At this point, he's only warming up.
You lose, you're going to get criticism. It's that simple. And the idea is that you got to keep your head down. You got to keep working. You got to do everything you can to put the team in the best position. And they got to feel that and know that. And that's something that Russ does. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, he doesn't get affected. He keeps coming out here working. I mean, heck, he might work harder. And I didn't think you could. So I think that, you know, I give him so much credit for that, is to keep his head down, keep working with all the different people that he's gone out on that field with. I mean, I just give him so much credit for that. Just all the different lineups that we've had. I mean, he just keeps grinding, keeps trying to make a play, keeps fighting no matter what.
See, now, all this talk about Russ losing people in the room, that would lose me. That would lose me right there. If I'm a player and I'm actually paying attention to the things my coach says in the media, if I'm hearing that, I'm like, really? Why? Why? Stink, give me an answer. You were around the team just a couple of weeks ago. Why is Hackett so reluctant to just kind of put Russ out there and put Russ on notice? Because I haven't heard it yet this year.
Yeah, I haven't heard it either. And, you know, the only thing I can think of is Russ has been empowered more than you've been empowered. And Hackett is a real positive guy. I don't know that he's put anybody on his team on blast individually in the media. I mean, you know, now maybe behind closed doors, there's a little bit more to it. But, you know, there's no question. And I know that they feel like, hey, practices have gone well and we've been pretty good in practice. And, you know, we've hit these routes and hit this timing and made these throws and we're just not executing in the game. Well, then I would say then maybe your practice isn't what you think it is. Maybe your practice is a little bit lollipop. Maybe you're not practicing at the tempo that is required to have it translate to games. That's what I would say, is that if all these things in practice seem to be going well, but they're not translating the game, then the speed of the game is different than the speed with which you practice. And I think there's a real my thought is there's realness to that. And there's a real discrepancy for some teams, and this is why you see so much ebb and flow. There's real discrepancy what you're doing at practice and how it translates to a game. And I hate certain things about practices that, like, when one guy or two guys are working and 12 guys are watching them work, that's not efficient use of time. You know, when you stop down in the middle of practice to have another special teams session and then all your players, your offensive and defensive players, all stand around and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
That's inefficiency. That lulls you to sleep. And I've been there. North Turner practice like that, hated it. Be on the field for, you know, 3 hours, 2 hours of work, 1 hour standing around. You want to talk about losing steam and momentum, much like you lose steam and momentum during the course of a game. Practice habits, the speed with which you practice. Like under Mike Shanahan, we did special teams before practice. It was like, that's what we did. And you're going to be out there before practice, and then we're going to stop down, we're going to stretch, we're going to do all that, and then we're going to play. Now, we may kick field goals at the end of a two-minute drive or whatever, but for the most part, we weren't bogged down that way. Joe Gibbs was the best I've ever been around. While we were doing 9-on-7 as an offensive football team, the defense was getting 9-on-7 with a scout team at the same time. Separate part of the field.
Yeah, there's a lot of standing around.
Right. Where there's never any standing around. I never felt like as a player that we were standing around waiting for things to happen. And it ends up you lose your edge, you lose your steam, you lose that competitiveness. That standing around does that for you, especially in today's day and age where,
you know, it's short attention spans. We got to be going. Go, 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 go. Work, 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 work. And I just don't think that happens enough.
To your point about Hackett being empowered, and there may be something to that. I can absolutely see that. But at this point, like if I could go up to him and just have a private moment, I'd be like, dude, look, you're likely on your way out.
Mm-hmm.
This will probably be the only chance you get in your career to be an NFL head coach.
Correct.
What are you waiting for?
Right.
Why are you worried about who's empowered and who's not and who's off limits and who is?
Mm-hmm.
You got nothing to lose, dude.
Right.
Right? I mean, you got to fire everything at your disposal right now. And if that means, especially when I hear Hackett refuse to really say anything critical about Russ, and then I hear Russ talk, and you had your own conversation one-on-one with Russ in which you tried to pin him down about things that he needed to be better at, and he was just kind of like, well, we need to score more touchdowns. We need to be better. No. What do you need? And so it's not only the Hackett refusing to say anything critical about Russ. It's Russ himself who continues to go along merrily along his way, like, hey, this is all part of the process, and I've been through ups and downs and ebbs and flows, yeah, and this thing will eventually work out. Great, you think it'll work out. You're looking at the long view. Awesome, good for you. Your coach doesn't have the same luxury. Your coach is probably going to be fired. Heck, most of the entire fan base wants him gone now. And I guess I just don't. Maybe it does explain a lot. Maybe it does explain a lot as to what we've been seeing this year, because clearly I don't see these two being on the same page at all.
They're
from a self awareness right. point or an empowerment. Your word, empowerment point.
Yeah, there certainly seems to be. I don't know if it's a lack of. Well, it's just a lack of whatever you're doing isn't translating. This has been the story of the Broncos for 6 years. Whatever it is you're doing at the facility isn't translating to wins on Sunday. And you got to figure out what that is. And I've talked to you a ton just about how you go about your business, right? How you translate that. Like, there are guys that are really weight room strong. Like, they're real muscle pigs in the weight room, and they get on the field, and that strength, that weight room strength doesn't translate. And then there's dudes that just are not weight room strong that on the field are just unbelievably powerful and play with great leverage. And so, you know, one of the things that I always look at is the tempo, the speed, the urgency with which you practice and how that translates to Sunday. And obviously, whatever you're doing over there right now is not translating to Sunday. And you've got to be able to create that atmosphere, that competition, that sense of urgency, that this Friday practice is the most important thing. This Saturday walkthrough is the most important thing we're going to do that's going to help us win a football game. And that's been such a part of this organization, that's permeated this organization for the last 6 years, that I just don't think guys really know what that feels like.
Well, it's one thing to have empowered Russell Wilson at the beginning here and said, hey, whatever Russ wants, Russ gets. This is Russ's show. If that was what it was, if that's how it was laid out at the beginning, okay. But Russ has lost that right. By the way that he and this offense have played. He's lost that right. Whatever empowerment, whatever he was promised, guess what? That's gone. And now he's in a position where he has to earn all that back. So I wish Hackett would start that shift, but it'll probably have to be the next guy who comes in, hopefully, and says, hey, look, Russ, I don't know what you were promised before. I don't care. That happened before I got here. We're doing things my way, this way. This is the way it's going to be done. I just don't understand why Hackett, with his career going down the toilet, isn't fighting more. That's all.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.